Captain Rhodes, of the Greenpoint precinct, said, "The people we arrested had nothing to do with the strange fires. The more I look into it, the deeper the mystery. So far I can attribute it to no other cause than a supernatural agency. Why, the fires broke out under the very noses of the men I sent to investigate. Sergeant Dunn, there were things that happened before my eyes that I did not believe were possible." New York Herald, January 7. Policemen and firemen artfully tricked by a pretty, young girl. Mr. J. L. Hope, of Flushing, L.I., had called upon Captain Rhodes, telling him that Rhoda had been a housemaid in his home, where, between November 19 and December 19, four mysterious fires had occurred. Now the captain was sure of Rhoda's guilt, and he told her so. She was frightened, and was advised to tell the truth. And Rhoda told what she was advised to tell. She sobbed that she had started the fires, because she did not like the neighborhood in which she lived, and wanted to move away, that she had knocked pictures from the walls, while her mother was in another part of the house, and had dropped burning matches into beds, continuing her trickeries after policemen, detectives, and firemen had arrived. The Caldwells were poor people, and occupied only the top floor of the house that burned down. Caldwell, a carpenter, had been out of work 2 years, and the family was living on the small wages of his son. Insurance was not mentioned. The police captain's conclusion was that the fires that had seemed supernatural to him were naturally accounted for, because, if when Rhoda was in Flushing, she set things afire, fires in her own home could be so explained. Rather than to start a long investigation into the origin of the fires in Flushing, the police captain gave the girl what was considered sound and wholesome advice. And though it seems quaint, today the girl listened to advice. Pretty, young girls have tricked more than policemen and firemen. Possibly a dozen male susceptibles could have looked right at this pretty, young girl, and not have seen her strike a match, and flip it into furniture, but no flip of a match could set wallpaper afire. The case is like the case of Emma Piggott. Only to one person's motives could fires be attributed, but by no known means could she have started some of these fires. Said Dr. Hastings H. Hart, of the Russell Sage Foundation, as reported in the newspapers, May 10, 1931, "Morons for the most part can be the most useful citizens, and a great deal of the valuable work being done in the United States is being done by such mentally deficient persons." Dr. Hart was given very good newspaper space for this opinion, which turned out to be popular. One can't offend anybody with any statement that is interpreted as applying to everybody else. Inasmuch as my own usefulness has not been very widely recognized, I am a little flattered, myself. To deny, ridicule, or reasonably explain away occurrences that are the data of this book, is what I call useful. A general acceptance that such things are would be unsettling. I am an evil one, quite as was anybody, in the past, who collected data that were contrary to the orthodoxy of his time. Some of the most useful work is being done in the support of taboo. The break of taboo in any savage tribe would bring on perhaps fatal disorders. As to the taboos of savages, my impressions are that it is their taboos that are keeping them from being civilized, that, consequently, one fetish is worth 100 missionaries. I shall take an account of mysterious fires from the St. Louis Globe Democrat, December 19, 1891. I shall go on to quote from a Canadian newspaper, with the idea of supporting Dr. Hart's observations. Reporters, scientists, policemen, spiritualists all have investigated phenomena of poltergeist girls in ways essentially the same as the way of a Canadian newspaper man, and that has been to pick out whatever agreed with their preconceptions, or with their mental deficiencies, or their social usefulness, and to disregard everything else. According to the story in the Globe Democrat, there had been extraordinary occurrences in the home of Robert Dawson, a farmer, at Thora, near Toronto, Canada. In his household were his wife and an adopted daughter, an English girl, Jenny Bramwell, aged 14. Adopted daughters, with housemaids, are attracting my attention, in these cases. The girl had been ill. She had gone into a trance, and had exclaimed, "Look at that," pointing to a ceiling. The ceiling was afire. Soon the girl startled Mr. and Mrs. Dawson by pointing to another fire. Next day many fires broke out. As soon as one was extinguished, another started up. While Mrs. Dawson and the girl were sitting, facing a wall, the wallpaper blazed. Jenny Bramwell's dress flamed, and Mrs. Dawson's hands were burned, extinguishing the fire. For a week, fires broke out. A kitten flamed. A circumstance that is unlike a particular in the Bedford case, is that furniture carried outside, and set in the yard, did not burn. An account, in the Toronto Globe, November 9, was by a reporter, who was a person of usefulness. He told of the charred patches of wallpaper, which looked as if a lighted lamp had been held to the places. Conditions were miserable. All furniture had been moved to the yard. The girl had been sent back to the orphan asylum, from which she had been adopted, because the fires had been attributed to her. With her departure, phenomena had stopped. The reporter described her as a half-wit girl, who had walked about, setting things afire. He was doubtful as to what to think of the reported flaming of a kitten, and asked to see it. He wrote that it was nothing but a kitten, with a few hairs on its back slightly singed. But the chief difficulty was to explain the fire on the ceiling, and the fires on the walls. "I'll not experiment, but I assume that I could flip matches all day at a wall, and not set wallpaper afire." The reporter asked Mrs. Dawson whether the girl had any knowledge of chemistry. According to him, the answer was that this little girl, aged 14, who had been brought up in an orphan asylum, was well versed in the rudiments of the science. Basing upon this outcome of his investigations, and forgetting that he had called the well-versed, little chemist half-wit, or being more sophisticated than I seem to think, and seeing no inconsistency between scientific knowledge and imbecility, the useful reporter then needed only several data more to solve the mystery. He inquired in the town, and learned that the well-versed and half-wit little chemist was also an incorrigible little thief. He went to the drugstore, and learned that several times the girl had been sent there on errands. The mystery was solved. The girl had stolen some chemical, which she had applied to various parts of Dawson's house. Occurrences of more recent date. Story in the London Daily Mail, December 13, 1921, of a boy, in Budapest, in whose presence furniture moved. The boy was about 13 years of age. Since about his 12th birthday, fires had often broken out, in his presence. Alarmed neighbors, or superstitious neighbors, as they were described, in the account, had driven him and his mother from their home. It was said that, when he slept, flames flickered over him, and singed his pillow. In the New York Times, August 25, 1929, was published a story of excitement upon the West Indian island of Antigua. This is a story that reverses the particulars of some of the other stories. It is an account of a girl whose clothes flamed, leaving her body unscorched. This girl, a negress, named Lily White, living in the village of Liberta, flamed, while walking in the streets. However, at home, too, the clothes of this girl often burst into flames. She became dependent upon her neighbors for something to wear. When she was in bed, sheets burned around her, seemingly harmlessly to her, according to the story. Early in March, 1922, an expedition, composed of newspaper reporters and photographers, headed by Dr. Walter Franklin Prince, arrived at a deserted house that was surrounded by snow banks out of which stuck the blackened backs, legs, and arms of burned furniture. The newspapers had told of doings in this house, near Antigonish, Nova Scotia, and had emphasized the circumstance that, in the dead of winter, Alexander MacDonald and his family had been driven from their home, by mysterious fires, unaccountable sounds, and the meanderings of crockery. The phenomena had centered around Mary Ellen, MacDonald's adopted daughter. With the idea that the house was haunted, the expedition entered, and made itself at home, Everybody quick on the draw for notepaper or camera. Mostly, in poltergeist cases, I see nothing to suggest that the girls' boys sometimes are mediums, or are operated upon by spirits. The phenomena seem to be occult powers of youngsters. In McDonald's house, the investigators came upon nothing that suggested the presence of spirits. Mary Ellen and her father, or father by adoption, were induced to return to the house, but nothing occurred. Usually, in cases of poltergeist girls, phenomena are not of long duration. Dr. Prince interviewed neighbors, and recorded their testimony that dozens of fires had broken out, in this girl's presence, but more striking than any testimony by witnesses was the sight, outside this house, of the blackened furniture, sticking out of snow banks. New York, Sunday, February 2, 1932. A dispatch from Blattonboro, North Carolina. Fires, which apparently spring from nowhere, consuming the household effects of C.H. Williamson, here, have placed this community in a state of excitement, and continue to burn. Saturday, a window shade and curtain burned in the Williamson home. Since then, fire has burst out in 5 rooms. 5 window shades, bed coverings, tablecloths, and other effects have suddenly burst into flames, under the noses of the watchers. Williamson's daughter stood in the middle of the floor, with no fire near. Suddenly her dress ignited. That was too much, and household goods were removed from the house.